this microphone sound, by the way? Because we moved it to a new location. Is this good? A little better? Okay. Probably not when I turn and look at you, right? Because then the mic's behind me, but we still got some playing around to do. All right. I'm pretty sure I did talk about the four viewpoints. I'm going to touch just on the four right procedures, and I think we're going to talk on the faculties of power. Mainly in the four right procedure, the key thing that I want to point out here, first and foremost, is this word evil. That's a weird word for Buddhists to use, right? Rarely, depending on the translator, do we see words like sin and evil and... yeah, that's it. But anyhow, we get those now and then. And I want to explain that Shakyamuni Buddha had a very specific definition for the use of the word evil. Evil is, first and foremost, not what the Judeo-Christian Islamic world would perceive it to be, according to Buddhism. It is not like this, the activities of Satan or any of that kind of crap. In fact, the definition of evil in the Buddhism refers specifically to those things that directly or indirectly cause harm to yourself or others in the capacity of physical, emotional, or mental, i.e. energetically. That's evil. Activities that do that, the Buddha defines as evil. Everything else, whatever. If it caused direct or indirect harm towards yourself or another on those levels, he says that's evil. So in the procedures, this idea, a right procedure is the same thing as an SOP. So this is Buddha's version of SOPs, standard operating procedure. This is exactly how you're supposed to engage your reality. And the reality is, at the very first, to stop any of that kind of activity from starting. Now, let's look at the word starting, because that's also very, very tricky. A lot of people and a lot of religions beyond just the Western ones have this very strange idea that if an evil thought comes into your mind, you are then evil. If you think something negative, you have sinned. As if you have done it. Well, that's not correct. And in fact, that's not even a proper translation of that scripture from that community. That's not what is meant. Starting is different from arising. So you're sitting there. Everything's going just fine. In fact, maybe for those of you in Bodhisattva class, you're in that Alaya state to just calm. Everything's fantastic. There's not a whole lot of activity going on in the mind, and everything's nice and cool. And then here comes somebody. with nothing happening, all you're doing is just washing some dishes and the mind is just at peace, and they come over and they go, "Hey, am I disturbing your mind?" And they rattle you out of your calm state. And now you've got a million things that bombard your mind, like, what the hell are you talking about? What? What's going on? Because they just threw something at you that's not in your reality. Well, you didn't say anything, so did I, like, disturb you? And you're sitting there going, well, you are now, because I was just having a calm. And now you just, like, threw a hand grenade in there and blew the whole thing up. Because I have no idea what you're even talking about. And then they go on and they rattle, and so now there's this big mess. So a thought arises in the mind. Man, I just want to strangle that person. Okay, that thought arises. That's not a problem yet. There's no issue there. Where the issue comes up, and exactly what, if we can borrow another teacher's sayings, where the issue lies that when you think about it, it's as if you've done it, is the word think about. If we entertain the idea of, yeah, I would like just strangle the daylights out of them, and then when they're no longer breathing, I'm going to put them in the trash and then take them out to the dumpster and then be done with them. Okay, that entertaining now is the problem. That affects you negatively, because you're entertaining this kind of negative energy and negative thought process. It also indirectly affects that person's energies. You can't do things disconnected from others. That's not possible. As much as we would really love to believe that's true, it's not true. It's absolutely not true. Scientists, like actual real scientists, you know, in those ivory towers all over in the universities and things like that, they've proven that this is true. They've proven that thought can affect the quality of water in front of the person. They have scientific evidence and photographic evidence that it's true. Just a person's thought. They can take a pure, absolutely pure, excellent water, take photos of the molecules in there, everything's fine. Sit somebody down who's absolutely negative, have them stare at that glass and think hate thoughts, and take a photo of that glass and it's all corrupt. It's awesome. It's a Japanese photographer that discovered this kind of thing. And then at the same time, they can reverse it by taking that same glass that's now all corrupted. They sit down some Buddhist monks from Japan, had them think all these positive thoughts, and then they took the photo again, and guess what? It's all nice and fantastic again. I'm not going to go on a tangent, but there is a tangent there that I could easily go in. But look, this is what we mean by starting. Because now we get into also what the Buddha says. What you think, and I want you to understand, the word think is processing, entertaining, stringing one thought and connecting it to another thought is the process of thinking. For example, if you're sitting in a car, it's parked, the engine may or may not be on, but if it's not in gear, and the parking brake is set, you are not driving. You're not driving until you link a whole bunch of actions together. Like, release the brake, go into gear, step on the accelerator, now you're driving. You've linked these things together and now there is happening. Buddha says, what we think when we link thoughts together and entertain them, what we think we become. And that's not avoidable. Christ says, if you think on the murdering someone, you become the murderer.
So if you think on stop thinking, then you stop thinking? Because that's not worth me.
What's that? I didn't hear what you said.
You said, so if you...
entertaining negative thought,
no,
yeah, and then what?
Think about stopping thinking, because you're like, trying not to do that.
Well, that's this section. So, now we understand definition of evil, and we understand what starting means. So the Buddha says in here, first you have to prevent this from starting. Well, how do we do that? If you recognize negative thought that arises in the mind, we can't entertain it. We have to move away from that. What that means, we're supposed to replace the thought with something entirely positive. Or just let it go. A thought not entertained just dissolves. Entertain the thought, and now you have a problem. Second, if it has started, meaning the thought came in and now you did entertain, you did begin the process of thinking it out, now you have to remove this as soon as possible. You can't let it take off. Kind of in a funny way, yesterday, a couple of us, we were driving to class, and on our way, there was a wedding, probably the reception, but, you know, they had huge tents, and I mean, it was big. There's a house pretty close to where we're renting our temporary space. That they have their house and then they have a lot that's empty and then another house. So on this big grass field, they set up all these tents. So to use this as an example, as we're driving by, is, oh, there's a wedding. You know, if we didn't have to go to class, we could dress up and crash it. That's thought. If you don't go any further than that, no evil is there isn't. Nothing happens. There's no entertainment. So, we entertained it by saying, well, yeah, so what we would have to do is we'd have to be dressed up and tell people when we're asked, you know, the bride and groom, we'd have to come up with the, you know, well, I'm the plus one. You know, my partner or my friend knows them or works with them. You know, that we'd have to come up with this cover. Now we're entertaining. You understand the difference? The thought that pops up, oh, you know, if we get dressed up, we can go crash that. That's a start. If we completely leave it alone and do nothing with it, there's no problem. If we add the next element, well, this is how we would have to do it. I think this might work like this. See, now the, what is the word, machinations begin. We're churning the story. We're filling in detail, trying to analyze. We're engaged. That's number two. If it has started, you got to shut it off. You have to take yourself away from that. The third one is to introduce the action of good deeds. Because if you've created a negativity and you allowed it to arise and you allowed it to be processed, well, now you have to balance it out. You got to do something with that. You can't just shut it off. In fact, if you just try and shut it off, you're not going to get any result. You're just going to go right back to it. Because your mind is like a child that has to be entertained until trained. If your mind is not well trained, it must be entertained. So just like a small child, you have to say, look, instead of putting your finger in a light socket, right? Jesse knows about this one. Instead of doing that, let's do this. Huh? I mean, we still do that with Daniel. You know, it's like, I know the torch is cool, but instead of lighting the couch on fire, let's put the torch down back in the Papa's toolkit and let's come over here and, you know, learn to use a saw on this nice block of wood. I mean, he doesn't use a saw, but you get it. You try to come up with something more useful. So it's to introduce the doing. You're trying to bring that concept or idea of positive in there. Well, let's try and introduce that. Let's throw that into the mind. Instead of drawing on the wall, let's draw on paper. It's better for the wall, and the crayons like it better. You know, that's what we tell Andrew. Crayons love paper. They don't like walls at all. And the walls don't like crayons either. And you try to introduce some kind of a good idea. You work to introduce that. The fourth, which is the growth and continuance of good deeds that have already started, those you want to encourage, which means if you've been doing any activity, like let's say those of you that know Tonglen, you know how to perform Tonglen properly. That's an activity that you know. It's a good deed activity. So you can introduce the thought, hey, you know, actually, instead of like wanting to destroy this person who has interrupted my peace and calm, what if I was to introduce Tonglen here? Now encourage yourself to do Tonglen. What if I took on myself their negative problems of low self-worth, fear, whatever it is that causes them to go, am I disturbing you, when nothing's actually happening? Whatever that negativity is, what if I breathe that in and give them back stability? What if I do that and then do it? Either do the breathing, if you know how to do it that way, or use your rock or your fruit or whatever practice or activity that you use for your Tonglen, and you engage it. That kind of encouragement reinforces a new habit. or reinforces an old one. You have to remember that whatever stage of life that you're in, you have, for whatever reason, probably because you're tired of suffering, but you have taken on the task of going after your lifelong encouraged bad habits. They have to be replaced by new positive habit. And they're not going to go easy. They're not just going to shut off. I mean, that's pipe dream stuff. I hate to tell you that, but that's not how Dharma works. No Buddha is going to come and just bop you in the head, and all of a sudden you're free of all your pains and sufferings of your karma, of your habits. That's not going to happen. No one's going to help you with it. So these procedures are your standard operating procedure for your existence. What you do when your habit of negativity arises, which Buddha calls evil. Now we can harness, so we have to power. We have to be empowered to do these standard operating procedures. Right? It's just like any kind of any kind of duty or job that you have where you have to engage in procedure, you have to be empowered to do so. You got to be trained to be able to engage these. And so the Buddha says there's five faculties of power that empower you, that deputize you to do these procedures. The first one is faith to believe. Now, Buddha is really tricky on this word faith. Very tricky. Gotta get my clock set up here because I'm running out of time. The term faith we have to be careful of because it's not blind. But when we say we have to have the faith to believe, it means that by studying the sutras, seeing the examples of the great monastics and bodhisattvas and the Buddhas and all the great masters that have come from this long lineage from the Buddha, to have faith to believe means that we give ourselves permission to engage in this encouragement that they represent. A lot of times we can just go, I don't believe it. And we do it without challenging it, without thinking on it. We just throw it, it's not going to happen. That's highly demonstrated whenever you are in a religion or refuse a religion, and a different one comes up to you and says, well, do you believe it? And you go, I don't want to hear or see that. No permission that there may be something actually there. Faith to believe. Like I had a guy just the other day at the work come up to me and say, so, are you a Christian? I said, no. Do you believe in it? And it's like, believe in what? Well, do you believe in the Bible? Well, I don't know what you mean by believing in a Bible, because I believe in a Bible like I believe in a dictionary. Both contain some truths. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, the word, I don't know, and whatever word I picked, I can't really think of one off the top of my head, but I just randomly picked a word and I said, you look this up in the dictionary, it'll tell you what it means. It'll tell you exactly what it means. So yes, I believe in a dictionary because it's a tool for communication. Do I believe in the Bible? Well, I believe that it is a text that contains some stuff in it that may or may not be useful. So, is it a book? Yes, I totally believe it's a book. Well, do you believe in its message? No. Oh, so you don't believe in it? Not the way you do. And then later he comes to me in the day and he says, so why don't you believe in it? And I said, well, look, actually, I'm ordained Buddhist and have been for a long time. And I've been practicing this for over 20 years now. And I don't have any interest in being converted to anything else. The same way that I'm sure, though you want to have a conversation on religion, you're not interested in just listening to what I would have to say about the Buddhism in order to convert you. And he said, well, I don't want to convert to Buddhism. And I said, well, that's great, because Buddhism doesn't convert anyhow. Which is why I didn't come up to you and say, so, do you believe in Avalokitesvara Bodhisattva? You believe in the Tantras of Vajrapani? How are you on the Bhairavi Sutra? Feeling good for you? The Prajnaparamita Sutras? And he was just like, whoa. And I said, yeah, see, that's just it. I don't know what you want to have a conversation about. And he's like, well, I just would want to present what I believe. And I said, well, if I have to present what I believe, it's going to take us about 10 years of you being my student. What do you think? You good with that? Because I can invite you to our beginner's class. That's a good start. Because if you're just going to tell me the whole story that everybody always tells you, that you burn in hell or else you take this guy, that's not going to win me. Your personal experiences won't win me because I've had my own. Which is why I'm one over here. See what happens? Faith to believe, we can believe in an ultimate and a relative truth that the stuff that we are drawn to, we allow ourselves to engage in. That's the first thing we have to do. Once we do that, we can go full force into the teachings of Buddha without having all of this fear and concern and approaching it as the observer. You know, one foot in, one foot out. You won't get too far in any faith that way. You gotta let yourself be in. Second, you have to have the will to make the endeavor. That is what we just mentioned a moment before this. You have to decide, I'm going to take on my lifelong invested terrible habits, and through my will or willpower, I'm going to go after it. And I am going to change myself. I'll do it. I'm willing to work towards failure. Because that's what's required. You're going to fail over and over and over and over in the Buddhism. And that's great. That is, in fact, the path. That's the second step. The third is to have the faculty of alertness. That's that whole mindfulness, awareness, intelligence. Constantly being on guard. In class last night, we were talking about vigil. It's having vigilance. Being on the watchtower, overlooking your practice. being alert to falling back into the traps, falling back into circumstances that bring you to those problems. Paramahansa Yogananda, founder of Self-Realization Fellowship, says, your environment will always be stronger than you. Well, that means we need to be very alert to what kind of environments we put ourselves in. Watch out. Don't let yourself get sucked in. Be alert. Fourth is the ability to concentrate one's mind. When things start getting a little wacky, get back into the breath. Get back into the now. Get back into sutra. Get back into concentration. Don't allow the mind to go all over the place. It's bringing yourself back into focus. Very, very important. And the fifth is the ability to maintain clear wisdom. Even when the mind is completely clouded with all kinds of activity and thought, your senses are bombarded, the fifth faculty of power is the ability to go inside. Usually that's this, that third eye. There's a whole huge important thing about that. It's gigantic. Even in Buddhism, it's huge. But it's the ability to concentrate and focus right back in there and bring your entire mindfulness, awareness, and consciousness back into clear light wisdom. And that's a real phrase, clear light wisdom. Obviously, you go, how do you do that? Well, there is no how do you do it. You need to develop your ability to even perceive clear light wisdom. If you don't know what clear light wisdom is, there's no way you're going to be able to maintain that state or go into it. That's why we have all these trainings. Buddha says, and listen to this, this is the most important line of the whole thing. These five faculties of power are necessary powers to attain enlightenment. You can't short-circuit them. You can't bypass them. You can't do two of four. You can't do four of five. You have to train and develop these five faculties. That is the method to enlightenment. It's the way to attain it. Byproduct is either six perfections, which we'll talk about that next week. We do have class next week, right? That's not our trip yet. Okay.